This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents When We Collided, written by Emery Lord, performed by Elizabeth Evans and Raviv Ullman.
Chapter 1. Vivi. I knew I was in love with Verona Cove on the first day, but I waited until the seventh day to commit. After 1 week here, I'm carving my name into a tree in the center of town. It's way harder than you might think, digging a pocket knife into ancient bark. 11 letters have taken me hours. Or it felt like that anyway. Fortunately, before the sun rises, no one polices Irving Park. Or anywhere, really. I'm pretty sure the worst crime Verona Cove has ever seen is someone dropping a napkin. The napkin dropper tried to chase it, I bet, but the wind swept it up. And eventually, somewhere, the napkin became litter. And besides, I'd actually enjoy getting caught. Clearly, since I implicated myself in jagged lines, forever etched into a tree older than any of the 3,051 people in this town, Vivi was here. When I'm done, I pat my handiwork because, okay, yes, I'm a nature vandalizer, but this is a crime of passion. I know the park doesn't mind because I love it here. And I think even the neatly trimmed grass and placarded benches can sense my affection. I take the footpath out of the park, only now realizing how much later I am than usual. The morning sun has edged past the horizon line, casting shadows of the leaves like lace on the sidewalk. Flowers burst throughout every inch of town. Fuchsia roses crawling over trellises. Forsythia blazing like yellow fireworks. As I walk down the sidewalk, the trees undress above me, dropping pale pink petals like a slow burlesque. This is why I want to stay forever. Not just for the summer. So far, my argument to my mom has been that Verona Cove makes Hawaii look like a floating garbage heap. I mean, I've never been to Hawaii, technically speaking, but I've seen pictures. Verona Cove is a tiny coastal town you might expect to find on the shore of Massachusetts or North Carolina. But instead, it's tucked into a tiny notch on California's curved back. I've lived in a few towns, so believe me when I say that Verona Cove isn't one. It's Mayberry meets the rainforest meets Shangri-La. Each detail is so perfect that it feels like a film set. And I want to run my hands across the painted lattices, the retro mailboxes, the street lamps that glow like rows of white moons. Everything is clean, but not totally pristine. Like every inch of town is lived in and loved. The shopping district is a 3x3 grid, and Main Street creates the center line. Every morning, I pass a handsome brick restaurant, a locally owned hardware store, and the bookstore. The storefront I'm aiming for is marked by a sandwich board with Betty's Diner in beautiful chalk script at the top. Below it reads in pink block letters, voted best breakfast by the Daily Gazette, followed by the breakfast and lunch specials. Cove Coffee displays a similar certificate in its window, voted best coffee by Daily Gazette. There's only one of everything in this town, a drugstore, a grocery, an art store, so each is the best by default. But I love that the town takes the time to honor each contribution. Bells jingle on my way into the diner, and I'm hit with the smell of maple syrup and coffee and spicy sausage. I've come here all 7 mornings, since there's nowhere else to go at this hour, and the excitement of a new town has been waking me up early. Because I'm later than usual, Betty's is full up with octogenarians. White puffs of hair hovering like clouds over the backs of the aquavinyl booths. Betty herself is behind the register, punching at buttons. Oh, hey, honey bun, one sec. I think Betty keeps words like sugar, darlin', and honey etched on a pair of dice in her mind. With each customer interaction, she shakes one or both dice to land on a single word or a combo. Honey pie, sugar darlin', doll baby. I like to hear who I am each day. The term of endearment is like a fortune cookie at my favorite Chinese restaurant. It's not why I go there, but it makes the experience a touch sweeter. She comes out from behind the counter, surveying the packed diner. Might be a quick minute before a table frees up. But I've already spotted my in, an older man wearing a thin sweater. That's okay, I'll sit with Officer Hayashi. She looks at me as though I have just said, I will tame a tiger now, and he will feed me pancakes with his paws. Ah, sweetie. He's a little particular about his alone time in the morning. And always. I'm not worried. I flash her a smile. Because I know something she doesn't. Officer Hayashi is no curmudgeon. My third morning here, I was on my way into Betty's when I spotted a German shepherd. All sharp angles, nose and ears, sitting in the back of a cop car. What are they bringing you in for, cutie? I asked through the cracked window. The dog stared back, proud and attempting the stoicism required for his job. Not assault or battery. No way, you're too gentle for that. I can tell. Trafficking? No, not the type. Aha! Theft, I bet. What was it? A whole pizza off the table? A birthday cake right out from under a little kid? You look like the sweet tooth type. His long tail smacked against the back of the seat.
Boneless wings with jerk sauce, a low voice behind me said. That's her weakness.
A girl dog. I felt silly for assuming otherwise. And, of course, she was wagging her tail at the sight of her partner, a man with white hair and a navy blue police uniform. When he got close enough, I read the name on his silver badge, Hayashi.
But she's not under arrest. Yet, anyway.
He took a sip of his to-go coffee from Betty's. Oh, I know she's on duty, I said. I was just teasing her. Couldn't resist. I'm crazy about dogs, and she's a real gem. I can tell these things.
Yeah, she's a good girl, aren't you, Babs?
Babs? I asked, bristling. What a name for a police dog. Honestly, all the male German shepherds get to be Rex and Maverick and Ace.
Kubaba, actually.
Even more ridiculous, though I tried not to react. Well, nice to meet you, Kubaba, I told the dog, and turning back to her partner, I held out my hand. I'm Vivi, by the way.
He shook my hand. You a law-abiding citizen?
I've never been under arrest. I smiled, coy about quoting him. Yet, anyway. But see, here's the thing. After that, I went home and searched the name Kubaba. And now I understand Officer Hayashi well enough to know he'll be kind to me. Hi, I say, approaching his table. He's staring down at the crossword, printing neatly with blue ink. Vivi, from earlier this week, I accused your canine unit of being under arrest. He looks up, studying me as if I'm trying to trick him somehow.
I recall.
Kubaba, I say, was the only queen of Sumer in her own right. The only woman on the Sumerian king list. A smile creeps onto his face.
You looked her up, eh?
A world of male shepherds trained to rip out a criminal's throat, and he named his regal girl for what she is. They're equal. Can I sit with you? He glances around, clearly trying to find another open seat he can dispatch me to. I just smile pleasantly, waiting for him to give in. Everyone does, eventually. His gaze shifts back to me.
Of course you can.
Old-timer snark. After which I am supposed to correctly ask, may I sit with you? But instead, I settle into the booth across from him, thumping my bag down beside me. And the good officer does not know what to do with me.
You sure you never been arrested?
He asks.
You seem like the type, disregarding social rules.
I splay a hand on my chest, all drama. Why, I would never! My lips press together, trying not to smile. See, even if I did get caught marking up the tree, I know Hayashi is an old softy underneath. When he returns to his crossword, I open my sketchbook to the page I was working on last night. My inspiration word is scrawled at the top and taunting me. To represent wabi-sabi, I meant to draw a simple pink gown, raw silk with a sort of ripped texture at the bottom. But I got caught up, and now it's a girl wearing branches of cherry blossoms, pink petals fanning out as if she's spinning. I start over on the opposite page, occasionally stealing glances at my table mate. When Hayashi doesn't know an answer, he chews on the tip of his pen and scowls at the newspaper, as if the page will be intimidated into giving up the correct word. "Hey, doll baby," Betty says to me, pouring coffee into my mug. I drink coffee for the taste, of course, since caffeine is the last thing I need. Most of the things I do in life are for flavor, not necessity. On to the waffles. My first morning here, I ordered the first item on the menu, the classic omelet. So I just decided I'd try everything in order. I've worked through all the omelets already. "Yes, please. Sounds positively divine." "Here you are, Pete." She sets a plate in front of him. Sunny-side-up eggs and crispy bacon on warm biscuits. I haven't gotten to that column yet.
"So," he picks up his fork. "What's with the Marilyn Monroe thing?"
I touch the ends of my curls. "It's not a Marilyn thing. It's a me thing." He's digging into his food, not even paying attention.
"Okay."
"Oh, honestly, can't a gal do something for the hell of it? I've gained some weight in the past few months, and the curves are new to me. So I thought, you know, what better time to dye my hair platinum blonde and cut it to a length between my earlobes and shoulder tops? I spun big sections of blonde into foam curlers and drenched the whole mess in home perm chemicals. I don't even really know anything about Marilyn Monroe, but girlfriend was onto something with her short curly hair. Bouncing on top of my head, it feels fun and light, and like I'd be ready to roll if the forest pixies ever asked me to go dancing with them. And as long as my hair is going to be all Marilyn-y, I figured I'd try out some red lips and nails. I've read that animal coloration can be for mimicry or protection, or for signaling to a predator or a potential sexual mate. Ha! Perhaps my platinum dye and red lips and pink cheeks are all of the above. Or perhaps I just look like plumage. When the waffles arrive, I push my sketchbook aside to make room, and I dig in, and oomph, carb heaven, golden and buttery and dusted with powdered sugar. Officer Hayashi is staring down at my sketchbook page. He uses a chunk of biscuit to mop up the last of his runny egg yolk.
"Wabi-sabi. You know what that is?"
"As I understand it," I say, trying to sound academic. "It's an untranslatable word. Wabi can mean rustic or stark or transient. Sabi is like faded or fading, old. Together, I guess it's like seeing beauty and simplicity in nature, in fleeting moments, and even in decay." He tips his coffee back, emptying it.
"Where'd you learn about that?"
"From my friend." Can I still call Ruby my friend? Her image invades my brain. Her hot pink lipstick and fringed black hair. And I'm sickened with missing her. With missing her whole family. Last spring, her mom did this huge mixed media show juxtaposing the Japanese aesthetics she grew up with and the Western aesthetics she studied in college. Before he can add anything, I sigh, gesturing to the sweeping cherry branch dress. "I'm trying to translate some of the concepts into couture, but I'm not sure I can mesh them with my personal aesthetics. I like inventive, bold fashion. So I have a feeling that once I finally get to Japan, I'll be more about the street style. Have you been?"
"I haven't, no. But I..."
He hesitates, pulling cash out of his wallet.
"I have always wanted to see Kinkakuji."
"The Golden Pavilion?" He nods.
"My mother spoke of it with awe."
"Why haven't you ever gone, if you want to?"
"Oh, you know, life."
With this, he tugs a worn baseball cap onto his head. He leaves our booth without another word. I'm not far behind him, because my morning routine has one more stop before work. Verona Cove sits above sea level, so if you walk westward on any street in town, you'll eventually hit the bluffs. Some of them drop off right above the ocean, and others taper downhill toward the shore. I think I imagined the California coast with surfers running headlong into the waves and with pops of colorful umbrellas. But it's quieter. Just the whoosh of water and call of birds. I stand on the cliff with mist rising from the ocean, almost straight below me. And even after a week of this, it stuns me. The natural world makes the finest architects and designers and artists look like silly amateurs. I'm so lucky to stand witness to panoramic blue skies and white-tipped waves and the craggy earth beneath my feet. I anticipated the few birds that scamper near me, which is why I pocketed some crumbs of waffle from my breakfast. They peck at the torn pieces on the ground, while I dig into my purse for the thing I came here to discard. I have 2 neon orange bottles in my purse, so I've got to make sure I find the right one. The pills are smooth to the touch. I push my finger against one pill to slide it out. Once it's in my hand, I wind up, because I've learned that you've really got to put some force behind the meager weight of a tiny pill. I fling my arm forward, hand opening for the release. The pill soars over the cliff, and I imagine the tiniest plink as it hits the ocean surface. Maybe a fish will spot it, and his round mouth will break above water to ingest it. And if he's been having some rough emotional ups and downs, he'll feel better. You're welcome, little guy. Turning my back to the Pacific, I start toward the pottery shop. I can't imagine a better summer job. I don't have to wear a uniform, and I get to watch people create art, which is almost voyeuristic. A glimpse at the bare soul. Magic, I tell you. Magic. I lucked into the job, really. On my second day in Verona Cove, I sat on the bench outside the shop, hoping to entertain myself for a while once it opened. By the time the owner showed up, an hour after the posted opening time, I'd run my pencil down sketching dresses. The owner, Whitney, has the warmest energy and the best curls I've ever seen, thousands of them tightly wound. I couldn't stop staring at her hair and thinking that God himself must have created it with a curling iron the size of a number 2 pencil. Her apologies flurried between explanations, that she got into this groove with her own pottery the night before, that she overslept again. We sat for the next hour, me painting a bowl for my mom, and Whitney organizing the glaze paints into rainbow formation. She kept apologizing, but I told her not to worry about it, that Sleep and I are only casual acquaintances. She joked that maybe I should work in the shop some morning so she could sleep in. Actually, I said, I've been meaning to get a job. That's when she stopped laughing and asked if I was serious, even though she could only pay me minimum wage. And, well, you can probably guess what my answer was, because here I am, digging for the shop keys in my bag. When I turn onto High Street, I see that the bench outside Fired Up is occupied. Sitting there are a little girl with pink sneakers and a guy about my age with dark hair. Even from a distance, I can tell his hair is not a styling choice, but the result of a perpetually overdue haircut. Kind of rumpled, with the start of curls. It's really great hair. If I had hair like that, I would never cut it or dye it or change a single thing. They're talking as I approach, the little girl swinging her legs. The guy is 17 or 18, too young to be her dad, but he almost looks like he could be someone's dad. I can see dark circles under his eyes, so maybe that's it. Or maybe it's his slouchy khakis and navy t-shirt with a pocket over his heart. This is not a cool outfit or an uncool outfit, just practical. Everything about him says he's too busy to even realize he's that cute. Good morning, I say. They both stare like I'm a cartoon character come to life. Hey. The guy stands abruptly, and the little girl follows his lead. You here to paint?
Yep,
he says. The girl bobs her head. Well, come on in. I motion to them with one hand while still rooting around for the keys with the other, and I give my most charming smile to spur them from their muteness. I'm not much for silence. It simply doesn't suit me. I'd rather carry on a conversation with myself than crawl the trenches of awkward nothingness. Since I'm not sure what else to say, my mind wrenches back to this morning's activities and my breakfast companion. Are you guys locals or here on vacation? I hold the door open, and they walk inside. The guy clears his throat.
Townies.
Oh, excellent. The door shuts behind us, and I plunk my purse down on the counter. Do you know if the Verona Cove police are strict? I mean, like, on first-time offenders, who may have created some, unsanctioned art on the local plant life? Asking for a friend, of course.
Chapter 2. Jonah. I'm going to murder my alarm clock one of these days. I don't use my phone as an alarm because there's a very real chance I'd chuck it out my attic room's window. Every morning the clock shrieks, and I mentally flambé the whole damn thing. Set it on fire in a huge saucepan. Laugh as it melts. On the rare morning that I feel almost awake, I give the alarm clock a stately Viking funeral in my mind. And there it is again, screeching. My feet trudge down the stairs. Must find coffee. Then shower, load of laundry, unload the dishwasher, work. Before I can get to step one, I'm sidelined by a hopping motion in the kitchen.
Jonah, today, today, today!
Leah's feet hit the linoleum on every other syllable. She's already dressed, right down to her pink sneakers. I was 11 when she was born, and sometimes I still can't believe she's old enough to tie her own shoes. What's today? Her smile flatlines.
I get to paint pottery. I filled up my chore chart and you promised.
Shit. I did promise. She crosses her arms.
Last week, Wednesday or maybe Thursday, you said Monday you would take me. Today is Monday. That means we're going.
You're right. I'm not awake enough to figure out how this will work. I have to be at the restaurant by 11, and my older brother and sister are already at their jobs.
But I really don't want to take the younger ones to the pottery place.
There's a saying about people being oil and water, but Becca and Isaac are like oil in a hot frying pan. Put them together, and they're hissing, spitting, and the occasional burn. They got into a screaming match yesterday morning over who'd get to sit in the recliner while watching TV. Becca lobbed a pillow at Isaac's head, missed, and broke a vase. So I grounded them both. I don't really know what grounded entails for an 8 and an 11-year-old, but it sounded authoritative at the time.
So we can go?
Leah asks. Yeah, we can go.
Yay, yay, yay!
Lifting a mug from the cabinet, I turn back to Leah. You want oatmeal?
I want peanut butter banana toast, but Becca wouldn't toast the bread for me.
How about peanut butter banana oatmeal? She makes a face. Fine. Toast it is. I redirect my hands toward a loaf of bread and then drop one slice into the toaster. I hand Leah the banana and a dull knife. She holds the knife in her right hand and braces the banana with her left, tucking the tips of her fingers under like I taught her. Our dad taught me. In the kitchen of his restaurant. He also showed me what would happen if I did not use this technique to protect my fingers from the blade. The demonstration involved ketchup as fake blood and a lot of dramatics. I was 9. It was the greatest thing ever. When the bread pops up, I plate it for Leah. She smears the peanut butter. Smiling, she says,
I'm going to paint a coffee cup for Mom at the pottery shop.
Good idea. I pour my coffee. Behind us, Isaac wanders into the kitchen. A chapter book eclipses his face. Isaac can walk while reading. Like, he can walk better while reading than the average person can walk while doing nothing else. He sidesteps street signs, climbs stairs, and dodges pedestrians. It's almost disturbing. He peers at us, and the refrigerator door is reflected in his glasses.
Did you say we're going to paint pottery?
We are, I say.
Yes, yes, yes,
Leah says.
Cool. I'm coming too.
Nope. You're grounded. And look at the chore chart. Who has all their checks for every week this month? Isaac squints at the chart, searching for an angle to argue.
Well, only Leah. But that's not fair. She gets all the easy jobs because she's the littlest. Anybody can sort laundry and set the table.
Leah scowls. I resist pinching Isaac, hard. Leah's only 5,
She does everything she can, and I never have to ask her twice.
Nobody argued during the days when my mom handled the chore chart, which is a laminated grid with our six names lining the left side. She managed our eight-person family's calendar of activities and events. She signed permission slips. She made waffles every Monday morning to soften the blow of the weekend ending. She put away Christmas decorations on December 31st. But that was before we became a seven-person family. Everything about my dad was big. His height, his laugh, his personality. Now I look at the pictures of the eight of us, and when I imagine him not there, the whole picture is off balance. And so are we. My dad used to joke that he'd forget his head if my mom didn't sew it on every morning. I was too young to know the saying about forgetting your head if it weren't attached to your body. Instead, I stared at my dad's collar. I wanted to see Frankenstein zigzags across his neck. Then he died. And it turned out my mom relied on him for basic function, too. My mom mostly stays in her bedroom now. Sometimes I wonder if she's whispering to her heart, beat, 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 to her lungs, in, out, like it takes all her time and energy to exist. On my way upstairs, Becca calls for me from the room she shares with Leah. She's on her knees, digging through the lowest drawer of her wardrobe. Have you seen my dark blue shorts? No. Wait, maybe? They're probably in the wash. Groans constitute at least half of Becca's interactions with me. She's 11, which I don't remember being nearly as difficult as she makes it out to be. I wanted to wear them today. Then do your own laundry. She moves toward her closet with another groan, stamping her feet. I take a sip of coffee. It's moments like these when I savor the bitterness. What's wrong? This is Silas's hasty response when I call his number. My older brother works at Cove Coffee as a shift manager, and I can hear the familiar noises in the background, whirring milk steamers and choppy voices. Is there any chance you can get off work early? What? I specifically took the early shift so I could be home in time for you to leave for the lunch shift. I know, I forgot I have to take Leah somewhere. You can't take Becca and Isaac, too? Sure I could. I just might wind up leaving them on the side of the road like old patio furniture or a moldy couch, with a cardboard sign that says, free, take. I grounded them yesterday. There's a pause from Silas's end of the phone. The silence communicates words we've exchanged many times before.
What if Isaac gets it into his mind to perform a science experiment,
or Becca decides to meet up with friends at the pool without telling anyone? Would Mom even know? Maybe it would make her snap out of it. Maybe she wouldn't care. Leaving them here could be the same as leaving two kids totally alone. But Becca's 11. Then leave them, and just tell Mom. They'll be fine. The line goes dead, and I dread my next stop. I don't know when I started to feel like the warden of an ailing shut-in. I stand outside the barely cracked door for a moment before opening it. Since my dad died, my mom has spent more time behind this door than she ever did while he was alive. On the good days, I know it's a matter of time before she wakes up. On the bad days, I think I'm watching her die in slow motion. Mom? Her head lags over toward me. She smiles weakly. I'll never get over it. How seclusion has whitewashed her cheeks. They used to flush from laughing, from running around the yard with Leah and Isaac. Hey, pal. Hey. I step closer, but not near enough to sit on the bed. I promised I'd take Leah to the pottery place. Silas is at work till 10, so it'll be Isaac and Becca here for an hour or two.
Okay.
She rolls over so she's facing me. Sorry I didn't get up to fix them breakfast. I'm just so tired today. Today and every day for the past 6 months. Although she does get up for church most Sundays. These apologies are a pretense. So are the questions. Would you mind packing lunch for the littles? could you walk Becca to soccer practice? She always asks. She always says thank you. I'd do it anyway. She knows that. Don't worry about it, Mom. There's no point in guilt-tripping. She can't make herself feel better. I can't make her feel better. None of us can. The least we can do is not make it worse.
Thanks, pal. Her smile is almost real, I think. What would I do without you?
I honestly don't know. With all her professed gratitude, my mom must understand that we're doing her job. The three of us older kids are trying to make up for two parents, day in and day out. I'd probably try to shake my mom awake if she didn't look breakable. I throw on the same clothes I wore yesterday and catch a glimpse of myself in the hallway mirror. Man, when did my hair get to looking like that? I guess I shouldn't be surprised. My last haircut happened when Candace Michaels pulled me out of the street and into her salon, like a stray dog. Best behavior while I'm gone. I mean it. If I find out there was fighting, I'm going to walk back to the pottery shop and put your nail polish collection, I tell Becca, then turn to Isaac, and your favorite books into the kiln. Becca rolls her eyes. Isaac doesn't look up from his book. Leah dances around in my peripheral vision. She can't contain her excitement within her personal space. She has to spin it around the living room. We have a van, but we only use it for trips out of town, to the mall for back-to-school clothes or to see movies at a big cineplex instead of our town's tiny theater. My older sister, Naomi, uses the van to get to her internship most days. None of us mind because we can walk everywhere in Verona Cove. Leah skips twice for every stride I take. We pass Mrs. Albrecht and Edgar, a poodle that looks so much like her that I've wondered if they're actually related. "Hi, kiddos," she says. We wave, and Leah pats Edgar's head. On our left, we pass a power-walking couple in serious workout clothes, and they do not say hello. There are two types of people in Verona Cove, vacationers and townies. Leah and I were third-generation townies. I'm not saying there's a turf war. That's an exaggeration. Townies rely on vacationers. We like them, even. And vacationers love Verona Cove. That's how they say it. But townies love Verona Cove like we love air. We don't have to say it or even think about it every day. It's in our lungs. It's what we're made of. Leah and I stop at Cove Coffee. Me for more coffee, and her to see Silas in action. "Hey," he says. He hands me a to-go cup of black coffee. "You got it figured out?" "Left him. It's an hour or two. I mean, we'll see how it goes."
"I can't see,"
Leah grumbles, so I lift her up. She loves a behind-the-scenes look at anything. Silas is topping a drink with whipped cream, then chocolate sauce, and Leah claps delightedly. He's worked here for a while, but she can't get over it. Her brother behind the counter. Silas grins and slides a tiny cup to the end of the bar. Hot chocolate. Leah squeals with happiness. But Silas holds one finger to his lips, winking at her. She mimics him, winking in this over-exaggerated way, closing her eye for too long. Psychologists would probably say we spoil her because she's the baby of the family, but it's actually because she's so damn cute. On our way to Fired Up, I drain my coffee and Leah slurps her hot chocolate. We settle onto the wooden bench outside the shop and talk about what we want to do this summer. I want to perfect my beurre blanc sauce, and I want to keep running on the beach so I don't die of a heart attack like our dad. But that's not how I put it to Leah. I say I want to try a few new recipes and become a faster runner. She wants to go to the library a lot and see that animated movie about ducks and build a sandcastle bigger than the one we built last year. We're strategizing the latter when I sense a presence on our right side. "Good morning." The girl looking down at us has white blonde hair, and her lips are the color of maraschino cherries. She doesn't look like any girl in my school,
She doesn't look like any girl I've ever seen in real life. And she's looking at us. Happily. No hesitation to be cheerful in our presence. Hey. I nearly stumble in my attempt to stand up.
You here to paint?
The girl cocks her head toward the storefront. At my side, Leah nods, and I continue my verbosity.
Yep. Well, come on in.
She grins, gesturing at us. As we wait for her to unlock the door, I look down at Leah. I feel like we should know this girl. She works here. She must live here. But Leah is too busy watching her.
Are you guys locals or here on vacation?
She holds the door open, and Leah and I walk into the store.
Townies. Oh, excellent.
She claps her hands as the door shuts behind her, and she sets her bag down.
Do you know if the Verona Cove police are strict? I mean, like, on first-time offenders? Who may have created some, unsanctioned art on the local plant life? Asking for a friend, of course.
I open my mouth to say, well, I'm not sure what, exactly. Instead, the girl laughs as she motions Leah forward.
Listen to me, getting ahead of myself. First things first, painting. Come on down. You're this morning's lucky winner. As your prize for being an early bird, you get to pick any seat in the whole place. I'm so thrilled to have customers this early in the morning. I mean, don't get me wrong. I also enjoy spending time with myself. I'm pretty good company.
The girl keeps talking as Leah selects the only table that sits inside a square block of sunshine from the window. I follow her, watching the beautiful girl as she ducks into the back room. She looks like lemon meringue pie tastes. Sunny. Tangy. Sweet. After she emerges, she drapes a small pink apron around Leah's neck, then ducks down to tie it in a bow at her waist.
So, what's your name?
Leah looks at me. She does this a lot, asking for permission with her eyes. I nod at her. I always nod at her. She doesn't need my permission to talk to people. When Leah stays quiet, the girl nods too.
You're so smart not to talk to strangers. That's something I was never good at when I was little.
Well, I'm still terrible at it, but once you get a job, they call it customer service. Her red lips move quickly, parting and closing to form each syllable. She holds out a hand to Leah.
I'm Vivi. I'm 16, almost 17, and I just moved here for the summer, and I live on Los Flores Drive. My favorite color is blue, and I love dogs and ice cream and laughing so hard that I almost pee my pants.
Leah pushes her lips together, crushing the smile that wants to form. The girl, Vivi, looks triumphant.
There. Now I'm not a stranger anymore. You know all sorts of personal things and even one embarrassing thing about me.
But you don't have to tell me your name if you don't want to.
I'm Leah.
She gives Vivi's hand a quick squeeze, not even really a shake.
Hi, Leah. So very nice to meet you. And what about you, cutie pie?
Vivi tilts her head at me, and a few round curls bounce toward the ground and back.
Did she call me cutie pie?
The only person who calls me that is Betty. Betty is 60-something and has known me since I was born.
Why are you also leery of strangers?
Jonah. I deepen my voice as proof that I'm a guy, not a cutie pie. Her laugh sounds like wind chimes. I don't know what I said that was funny. She stands on her tiptoes to slide an apron over my head.
Oh, I'm not painting. I'm just the brother.
Don't be ridiculous, Jonah, she says. She moves behind me, securing an apron around my waist as she did with Leah. I don't hate it. She surveys me in the apron, smiling, before glancing down at Leah.
I think the paints are calling your name. I highly recommend going wild with them. There are 86,000 colors, and I bet you could use at least half of them. The more, the better.
Leah selects as many paint bottles as her little hands will hold, and then grabs two mugs. Apparently, I, too, will be painting a mug. I dip a brush into some dark blue paint. Leah hunches over her mug,
already committed to detail work. I swab a wide paintbrush against the mug again and again, methodically. When Vivi returns, she sets a roll of paper towels and a mason jar of clean water on the table. Then she sits down in the chair next to mine. I'm going to say something first this time. Maybe I'll decrease my chances of being such a dumbass.
So, what do you think of Verona Cove so far?
Basically, I'm in love. I actually expected ginormous beach houses and towering hotels, but it's so refreshing that nothing here is ostentatious or trying too hard or soulless. All the quaint houses and B&Bs, it's charming.
I shake my head, eyes on the mug. I'm filling the coarse porcelain with flat blue strokes.
Yeah, the city council won't approve zoning ordinances for any new single-family residences over 3,000 square feet. They won't approve hotels either, just bed and breakfasts.
She blinks, taking in that information. Oh, God, I am such a jackass. It's unbelievable. This girl probably speaks three languages. This girl probably has a cool older boyfriend or an acoustic rock EP, or both. And I say the phrase, zoning ordinances? That is fascinating. Her eyelashes have slowed. They're so dark, hovering over blue eyes. Wait, did she just say fascinating? Without a shred of sarcasm? I'm so completely taken with the history of Verona Cove because it's not like anywhere I've ever been. And I just want to know how it's this way and why it's that way. Know what I mean?
I want to say yes. I want to say, yes, beautiful girl, I know. I understand you to your very core. We are soulmates. Instead, because of the aforementioned jackassery, I shrug. I've lived here my whole life.
Well, take my word for it. You're a lucky guy, like every single number on the lottery's winning ticket lucky. Not many people get to have their whole childhood in a place so beautiful. Or so small and kind that you tell people your name once and they actually commit it to memory. Holy hell. Where does this girl live that people don't remember her?
New York, probably. So, where are you from?
I lived a lot of places. Seattle last, and most. I was born there. Then we moved to Boulder, but back to Seattle after a year. From there we moved to Utah, then San Francisco for a bit before going back to Seattle. Been there a while, until we came here.
Seattle. It rains there a lot.
Well, this is going great. Conversationalist of the year. I'll just continue to recite basic facts about U.S. cities until she wants to go out with me. To my surprise, she grins.
Yes, it does. It also doesn't rain there a lot. They don't tell you that part. That the rainy season is dreary, but the sunny days are more beautiful than anywhere.
So, you're on Los Flores? Which house?
The really modern one. Richard, the guy who owns it, is my mom's number one buyer, and he is in China for the summer, so he offered it to us.
He thought the seascape might inspire my mom, which it totally has.
She leans toward me, covering her mouth with one hand. Plus, he's a bachelor, and between you and me, I think he's got the hots for her.
There's a tug at my sleeve. I glance down at Leah's mug, which she's holding up for my inspection. Shakily painted hearts in every color. The in-between surfaces are filled with mint green paint. Looks great, Leah. Mom will love it.
She smiles, but then Vivi starts in.
Oh, wow! Are you an artist?
Leah's brow furrows.
No?
Well, you're very talented, let me tell you. There are people much older than you who can't paint nearly as well as you, and I know, because my mom is a painter as her job, so I can tell when someone has a gift for painting. Jonah, for example, does not.
This makes Leah giggle. Her cheeks are pink with pride. Mine are probably pink, too. I open my mouth to make excuses for my solid blue mug, but Leah gets there before me.
Your mom is a painter?
The question startles me. At home, Leah will say what's on her mind. But in public, even around her friends from school,
She sits in the back seat of every conversation. Oh, yes. That's why we're here, so she can paint the sun and the ocean. Leah considers this.
So, you don't know anybody here except your mom?
Vivi shrugs.
Well, I've met some people.
Why?
Do you have any good friend recommendations? Or fun things to do? Or the best places to eat?
My house,
Leah says.
That's the best place to eat.
Your house, Vivi grins. Leah nods.
Jonah, can Vivi come over for dinner tonight?
Look, I'd love to go out to dinner with this girl, but not dinner at my house with my crazy family. They're both looking at me. Shit. I honestly have no excuse. We don't have any food? What a lie. I buy stuff in bulk to save money. The truth is too brutal. My mom is lost in a depressive episode, and I have 5 dysfunctional siblings. Vivi makes eye contact with me, and I mentally plead with her. Please don't make me sit at our kitchen table and watch you take it all in. The bickering, the stark lack of a parent.
Sure, if you want to.
Vivi claps happily, and Leah smiles. You didn't have a shot anyway, I tell myself. So, nothing lost. Leah handed me a ticking time bomb of an idea, and I signed for the delivery. Now I'll have to let it blow up in my face.
What are we having tonight?
Leah asks.
I haven't decided yet. What do you want? Pizza, but not the store kind, the kind that you make.
She glances at Vivi.
It's the best, you'll love it.
It's not a cheap meal to make, but I'll do it. Leah gets up to choose an additional paint color. When she's far enough away from us, I stoop my head down. You don't have to do this if you don't want. Honestly, she'll understand. Of course I want to. Vivi narrows her eyes like I'm talking crazy. As if accepting a dinner invitation from a 5-year-old is the most normal thing in the world. Like I said, I'm new to town, and also, my mom doesn't cook, so I've eaten cereal for dinner for a week. Delicious cereal, actually, but I could use some hot food. Some sustenance, you know? So what time should I come over? I trail off. I'm calculating how long it will take me to get ingredients, walk home from work, and make the dough. And how long it will take me to clean up the house, persuade my siblings to be normal in front of Vivi, and figure out what, if anything, to tell this girl about my parents, or lack thereof. I need 2 weeks. Minimum.
Here.
Vivi grasps my wrist, pulling my whole left arm toward her. I feel wetness against my skin, the cool stroke of a damp paintbrush. When she's done, my arm displays 10 digits in blue paint. Her phone number runs from my bicep, where my t-shirt sleeve begins, to the base of my palm.
Just text me when you know.
By the time we step outside, we've been at the shop for less than an hour. In that time, Leah made a new friend, and I got a girl's phone number painted on my arm. I look down at Leah.
That was weird.
She nods.
Good weird.
Now I have less than half a day to make my life seem normal, or at least normal enough that a pretty girl can come over and not run away screaming. I need a plan, and a haircut, and possibly trank darts for my siblings. Leah is walking on the curb like it's a balance beam. I watch her for a moment before asking, How weird do you think our family is on a scale of 1 to 10?
100,
she says simply.
But good weird.
Most days I feel like I'm barely holding it all together. But if my little sister can believe that her life is good despite having no dad and a ghost of a mom, then it's worth it. Good weird. I know it doesn't sound like much, but it's enough.
Chapter 3. Vivi. Morning, Vivi. I look up to see Whitney bustling toward the front counter. Her hair frames her face with tiny tendrils. Deep chestnut with a hint of red in the broad daylight. I'm immediately envious of the maroon skirt that wraps around her waist and falls all the way to the floor. Good morning. How's business today? She sets down a small box of new paints. Pretty darn good. 15 customers in, what has it been, 6 hours? One person painted 2 things. Plus, I made a new friend. And I turned to her, making my eyebrows dance with intrigue. I met a boy. Whitney spins toward me, already grinning. Oh, really? I think back on Jonah. His messy hair, his dark eyes the color of a filled-up coffee mug when you stare into it. Deep and brown and fading into black. Delicious. Warm. Mm-hmm. Would I know him? Is he a vacationer or townie? Whitney rubs her hands together like she's waiting for me to bundle up my juicy details and hand them over. Townie. Jonah. His name is easy to overpronounce for bravado. Jonah. I love the O and ah and the N sound that requires tapping my tongue on the roof of my mouth. My name only needs lower lip and front teeth to say out loud. Whitney's eyebrow ring moves up at least an inch, catching the overhead light. Jonah Daniels? I have no idea. Medium height, dark hair, has a darling little sister named Leah. Sort of has this distracted, overwrought vibe. Yeah, that's Jonah. Whitney has gone from excited about my hot gossip to perplexed by something. I can't tell which detail has thrown her off. Oh, heavens, if he has a girlfriend, that will be a terribly annoying hiccup. One I'll overcome, of course, but annoying nonetheless. It'll take a while to deal with, and I'm not made of time. I have plans, you know, good ones. Whitney crosses her arms more tightly. So, he asked you out? Well, not technically. Leah asked me to come over for dinner, and Jonah agreed to it. But I think he liked the idea. Well, maybe I'm projecting that, but he'll like the idea by the time I leave the dinner table. I flash my winningest smile. But she still looks unsure. Gosh, you're acting like he has leprosy or something. What is it? If he's an axe murderer, just tell me quick so I can decide whether to risk it for dinner tonight. No, it's just... Whitney trails off. His family has been through a lot in the past year. Everyone has been worried that... You don't have to tell me, I say, cutting her off. In fact, I'd rather you didn't. I don't mind being introduced to people's skeletons firsthand, in person. I more than don't mind it. I prefer to reach right into the closet and shake their bony hands and say hello for myself. Whitney laughs. You're a good girl, Viv. Why, thank you. I give a little curtsy. Besides, it takes a lot to scare me off, especially when the boy is completely unaware how hot he is, which amplifies it, if you ask me. Like, the responsible older brother thing is pretty sexy, don't you think? Whitney laughs. I'm 26, Viv. I don't evaluate the sexiness of 16-year-old guys. Well, then take my word for it. I wink, laughing as I grab my purse from behind the register. On my quick walk home, I'm sure of my choice to not know Jonah's secrets. I've been through a lot in the past year, too, and I would never want someone handing out my personal information like it's a flyer to a concert or a coupon for a new restaurant. Those are my truths to disclose in my own time, if I ever do at all. None of that's very fun to think about, though, so by the time I reach Los Flores Drive, I've switched to thinking about my paintbrush gliding across Jonah Daniels' skin. Richard's house is a Maud Beach bungalow that is very middle-aged single man, all sleekness and hard edges. There are industrial-looking lights suspended over the kitchen island, and the couch rests on spiky wooden legs. Basically, the house is very chic, but the furnishings are not cozy. It's the newest-looking house I've seen in all of Verona Cove, which is a bummer, but house crashers can't be choosers, I guess. I hung strands of lights on every wall in my room here, trying to cozy it up, and make it look as close to a Yayoi Kusama exhibit as possible. I do give the house points for the floor-to-ceiling windows in the living room. They're not even windows, really. They're walls made of glass. They meet in the right corner, which points directly to the ocean. It's positively magnificent. When the sun sets in the evening, it sets across the entire living room. Big curtains drop down with the push of a button, but my mom and I can't bear to use them because it seems like such a waste. At night, we gaze over the ocean, and we can't believe the vastness or the blackness or how busy the waves are while the rest of the world sleeps. And oh, Lord, the way the moon fills up the cosmos. There is divinity in this view, I'm telling you. It makes me believe my mom when she says Richard may be a gajillionaire businessman, but he also has a very deep soul, like a tide pool with a drop-off you wouldn't expect from such a serene surface. Inside, my mom is sitting at her easel, which is set up in the living room corner. She's the captain, steering at a glass bow that points seaward. She's been working on this same painting since she first set eyes on this glorious view, and my instinct is that it is almost done. The painting is an abstract, like tangled ribbons of color all over the canvas. Most of her pieces look, to the untrained eye, like a total mess. A joyful, colorful, total mess. It is not so hard to see how she made me, too. She twists around, finally noticing me. Hey, Chicky.
Heya.
How was work?
Oh, delightful, really.
When she stands up, she stretches her arms over her head. I'm sure she's been in the same position for a while. She looks at me. Then the look turns more intense, and she steps closer, close enough to rest her soft hand against my cheek. Have you lost a little weight? I stiffen, pulling away from her touch.
No. I don't know. No.
Are you sure? I sigh because I hate this for two reasons. One, I don't want to go back to being a beanpole. Fuller hips look gorgeous on me, though I'm still hoping my chest fills out more. Two, I know what she is implying.
Well, Mom, it's summer in California, so I'm probably sweating more or something.
Viv, she sighs, closing her eyes for a moment, like a tiny prayer for strength. Please, don't make me ask.
I won't make you do anything. I glower at her. How about you just don't ask?
I hate to be reminded, and I hate that she still thinks about it.
I don't think about it. At least barely, because I don't see the point in reliving the bad parts of your life. Earlier this year, I got too low, and then too high. They put me on medicine that pulled me out of my rabbit hole, and one of the side effects was weight gain. That's why my mom is being suspicious and suggestive and unfair. I try to do this thing when I get upset, when I start to float upward in a rage. I push all my anger down my arms. Then I snap my fingers with both hands, trying to crush those feelings. The sound, the feel of that snap. Sometimes it brings me back to earth. My mom follows me as I go up to my room. I look over my shoulder, snapping my fingers once on each hand. Nope, still furious. I'm almost 17. It's very hurtful and insulting that you don't trust me. We stop outside my door. And she looks sad. So sad. Like she's helpless to silence what she's about to say.
Viv, tell me that you're taking your pills. Just say it, and I'll believe you.
I step into my room, then spin around to face her, my hand already steadied on the door to slam it. Yes, okay? Yes, I am taking the stupid fucking pills. The door hits, heavy against its frame, and it echoes into the hallway. I burrow into my bed, angry enough to cry, which isn't a shock considering I'm angry enough to yell the F-word in my mom's face. I don't even care, because I've asked her 80,000 times to just not bring it up. And honestly, how hard is that? Avoiding one single topic in the entire ever-loving world? I let myself cry for a while, pitiful and sprawled out on my comforter. And I bury my head into Tanist's plush fur. Tanist has been my best stuffed animal friend since I was little. My mom suggested that I name him Tanner because he is a tan-colored dog. But since he is completely tan and I couldn't imagine him being Tanner, I named him Tanist. He lives at the head of my bed with a pink pony named Rosabelle and a stuffed turtle named Norman. I'm not sure how long I've been sniffling when my phone beeps. Hey, it's Jonah. From this morning. From this morning, like he had to remind me. Like I met another more memorable Jonah in the past few hours. A smile sneaks across my face. How darling that he thinks I'd forget him inside of 6 hours. I roll over onto my stomach, holding my phone in both hands as I type. "Hi, Jonah from this morning."